Hello, welcome to Poet Runner. Today we'll be talking to our brand new substitute co-host, also going to be a vital part of Poet Runner in the coming months, probably coming years, probably for a long, long time. Howdy. And this will be Alice, and I'm not going to mispronounce her name. Last name.
Cepages.
Alrighty, so first of all, how long have you been writing, and when did you start writing, and when did you actually first write a poem?
Wow, well, I've been writing as soon as I learned how to write, pretty much since kindergarten. And I think the first time that I wrote a poem, I was in first grade, and it was just a funny little limerick, but I definitely always was coming up with different stories all throughout my childhood, and I would write them down. And then in high school, I discovered Neruda and Lorca, but Neruda became my all-time favorite poet and had a great influence on my work. And I come from a family of writers on my mom's side, on poets. Both of my grandparents wrote poetry, and so do some of my cousins and my niece in Mexico and Zacatecas, and so it's definitely something that I grew up with, and my parents had, you know, all these books of poetry in the house: Octavio Paz, Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz, and my grandmother was always coming up with different riddles and poems and songs. So she helped raise me, and I was very close to her, and she had a tremendous influence as well. So yeah.
So how have you been published? Have you been published much in journals and literary magazines and stuff like that?
I've been published. My first language is Spanish, and so I write my poetry in Spanish first, and then I do my own translations. And I've been published in Mexico by the Autonomous University of Zacatecas, and the University of Guadalajara, UDG, not in the United States yet, hopefully soon.
Or do you want to see the poetry taking you? Do you want to write a poetry book, a novel, what?
Yeah, I definitely want to write a collection, or assemble a collection rather, because I have all of these poems that I've been writing for many years, you know, even since college. I have some that I would like to include, and so I definitely want to publish a collection and assemble all of my poems, all of the best ones. So for sure. Yeah, the challenge is finding a publisher that will include both the originals and the translation. So I'm working on that.
And Do you read out loud? Do you go to readings? Do you stuff like that?
Yeah. I've been participating in readings since my sophomore year in college. I joined Poetry Center San Jose, and I started going to their readings, and I've been featured, well, last weekend, on August 27th, I was featured at Medicine for Nightmares bookstore in the Mission, and the event was called Borrowed Tongues, and it featured a Filipino and Filipino poets, and it was sponsored by Poetry and Prose Magazine and the San Francisco Public Library. So that was a wonderful event, wonderful night.
And what else would you like to do with poetry? Where would you want it to take you? What do you want?
Well, I think one of the things that that I really love to do is I served on the board of Poetry Center San Jose and also Bay Area Generations here in the Bay Area. And now I joined Poet Runner, and I just love bringing, you know, people together, promoting poets in our communities, and also, you know, featuring poets, you know, promoting poetry in communities that are underserved, you know, and getting the youth involved, getting kids involved, doing workshops with in elementary schools or high schools. That's something that I'm really passionate about and that I participated in Poetry Center San Jose, and also helping. We also did for Poetry Center San Jose, there was also a program for people who were imprisoned, so working with prisoners, and also a mental health clinic, because poetry is very healing, and it's very therapeutic. So there's just so many wonderful things that can be done with promoting poetry, and so much that can be, you know, so many ways that people can be helped by it. And so, yeah, I'm really excited.
So what poet do you like that's, you know, not living anymore that you like to read, to, you know, sit with?
Neruda. he's still my favorite. His poems are just, I think, unequaled, and port me to this other landscape. You know, the poems that the romantic poems that he wrote for his wife Matilde are just so beautiful, and also the poems that he wrote in exile, his political poems are just really powerful, and definitely Neruda. Lorca is another one that I just keep going back to. I have the anthology of all of his collected work. And, you know, every now and then I just randomly flip to a page and read one of his poems, and it's just as good every time that I read it, you know, like the first time.
Hmm. What do you think of poets who just work at poetry and they don't have day jobs?
Well, if it works for them, I think it's really difficult to make a living as a poet. I think that, frankly, you should write poetry because you have to, you know, because the words just spill out of your being. You know, you can't contain them. You know, if you're going into poetry as a business, that's definitely not a great thing, I don't think. I think it also takes away from your writing. It usually doesn't lend itself to a very authentic voice, because I think that poets can fall into the trap where they're writing, you know, for a specific audience to sell their poetry. And it's not to say that there aren't poets that are very successful, but even the one, you know, like Jericho Brown, you know, comes to mind, but even he has a day job, you know, he's a professor at Emory, and actually the head of the English department there. So, even poets who are very successful typically have day jobs. So I try not to be too judgmental, but I don't think it's the best idea, you know.
I think it's a crap of shit.
Yeah.
I just think if you're going to write, my thing is, look, if you're going to write poetry, write it, but if you're working in poetry, then where's your experience? You don't have a day job that you write about, because what are you going to write about? You're going to write about, hey, I didn't get the poetry gig. So, you know, and just limits you. You limited your life experience, becomes smaller. And it's dumb.
Yeah.
And it's like you said already that even people like Nikki Giovanni, Robert Pinsky, Philip Levine, all these great poets who have great names are professors, and they have second jobs, and they
exactly.
don't sit there saying, I'm a working
yeah.
poet. That's bullshit. And I think people who say they're working poets are idiots and stupid, because you limit yourself, and I don't think you should limit yourself. I mean, I don't like washing dishes, but at least I'm experienced in life, and I'm not saying, well, for my poem. Screw that.
Absolutely.
That's dumb.
Yeah.
That's just dumb.
Yeah, and again, it's just, you know, it takes away from your craft too, I think, like you're saying. It doesn't provide you with the breadth of experience that living, you know, living a normal life does, you know, living a...
Important part. I'm not going to mention his name, but his work's becoming repetitive because he doesn't have anything to draw from anymore, you know?
Right. But he probably thinks that that's what's selling, so that's what people want to hear, and so that's what he's writing. But, again, that's a problem. I think that the poems, the best poems are the ones that talk about, you know, struggle, or, you know, your just, you know, your family, the things that are important to you, you know, your loved ones, your kids, you know, tragedies that happen. I don't know, things that are very personal and very raw. And those are the things. Those are the poems that move me the most. You know.
No, it's like
or things that people are passionate about. Oh, sorry.
No, things like we're trying to do, be you, Richard, and whoever else comes aboard, is we're trying to get the people we take care of paid. You know, we're not just trying to get ourselves paid, but we're also trying to publish a broadsheet. We're trying to get poetry out there. We're not just being selfish about it, because if you're the only person trying to get paid in the room, and it doesn't work. But if you're trying to get the people you bring out for a poetry reading, at least get them paid so they don't feel bad traveling to your reading, so you can at least give them 50 or 100 bucks. At least they haven't wasted their time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the things that I really loved about, you know, being on the board for Poetry Center San Jose is that, you know, we always made sure that the travel expenses were covered for the poets who were coming and from out of town, and also, and everyone got an honorarium, you know, and it's always nice. I mean, recently for the event that we had at Medicine for Nightmares, we all received an honorarium, and that's always nice, you know. Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's important to support each other as poets, right? And promote poets that maybe are unknown and who are really talented, and lifting each other up. I mean, I think that's very important. Yeah, absolutely.
I just find I know a lot of poets, and I know a lot of good poets. I know a lot of bad poets. I know a lot of selfish poets. I know the people who generally give a shit about poetry, and I know the ones that think they're going to become rock stars, and that's all they want is to be rock stars. But poetry's not about being rock star. And it's like when
exactly.
I was talking to Hiram Chara. Like when I was talking to Hiram Chara, you know, poetry is just something you write what you feel, and it shouldn't be marketed. You've got plenty of people that market
poetry,
it for you.
No, good poetry comes from the deepest parts of your soul. You know, and your heart. I mean, that is the mark of a good poet, I think. And that's the reason I love Neruda so much, right? Is all of his poetry comes from the soul and what a soul it is, you know, or it was. Although I think Neruda is eternal, right? Into the soul is eternal. So, yeah, I'm full agreement.
Yeah, it's like Effort Tonight gives you an example of prison life, and then you have Joshua November, who writes about being Jewish in his poems, and that's great because those poems give you realities that you're never going to experience, and it's like reading Langston Hughes. You're reading about the black experience, but you're never going to truly understand what it is to be black. But at least reading the poems, you understand some of the suffering. But you can't pull yourself into believing that you actually know what it's about.
Yeah, but we're able to peer into the window, you know, of someone else's world, right? So, yeah.
Last week, Richard had a friend, Dan Denton, was a working class poet, and, you know, writing about the working class struggle, and, you know, and Richard today's getting an award for, you know, being a working class poet, and, and to me, that's the way it should be put. You know, poets should all have jobs, and we should have something to write about, but I don't like the whole, like, well, I'm a working poet.
Yeah, it's definitely problematic. You know, and I mean, like I said, I guess it works for those people. I mean, they're perfectly content, but it's not the poetry that gets me excited, you know. And I do think that it takes away a lot from their work and from their potential, because you know, oftentimes their work takes a nosedive once they go down that path. So, yeah, it's unfortunate.
We got poets right now like Gina Derone, who actually helps with healing and taking care of people. She has her own podcast where she talks about stuff like that. And she's not just a freaking poet. And I like that a lot more than just, you know, I don't know. I just find it poetry is just, I don't know. I've never called myself a poet. If someone's going to call me a poet, fine. But, you know, my granduncle was, my grandmother was. But I don't believe in labeling yourself something. Let people call it. If they believe you are, then you are. But, you know, as soon as you start saying you are, doesn't mean you are. You know, you write a poem, great, and if people love, like it, then you're a poet. But a lot of people, you know, just, you know, go about the label because they want, you know, some kind of label.
Yeah, they want the, they probably want the attention too, right? So,
yep.
Or the accolades that come with that. I think, again, the best poetry comes about because we have to get it. We have to get it out, you know. It's, you know, I don't know about you, but sometimes it's just an idea for a poem comes to me and I just grab whatever I have on hand. Like, you know, like sometimes I'm out and about and I just grab like a napkin. I always have a pen on me and I try to carry my little moleskin notebook with me too in case I get an idea. But there have been times where I'm like, oh my gosh, I just have to write this down. So,
you know. Do you want to read something?
Yeah. Let's see. I'm going to actually read the poems that I read, some of the poems that I read. If we have time, I'll read all three, but I'll start with the first two in the order that I read at the event last weekend. And I'm going to read that in Spanish first, in the original, and then I'll read the English translation. El pañuelo rojo en un mar de hojas verdes como una bandera, el calor opresivo cubriendo las espaldas doradas y frentes con gotas de sudor, el sonido del tren sobre los rieles y los campesinos que no tienen un momento para pausar, para respirar, las máquinas amarillas pausadas como monstruos. El país no comería sin ellos, pero sin embargo se los come vivos. Y los campos santos están repletos de los cadáveres de aquellos que cruzaron la frontera buscando su sueño americano y en vez fueron devorados por la jauría de lobos que se llaman rancheros, que se llaman políticos, policías, hombres honorables de negocio, lobos vestidos de blanco con navajas como dedos y colmillos que desgarran. Cuando veo los campos llenos de mi gente en este estado dorado, con el horizonte que se desaparece en lo infinito, pienso cómo mi raza se muere, a veces paulatinamente, lentamente, poco a poco, y otras veces en un torrente de balas, bajo el sol, en el campo, en el desierto, y cómo corren los llanos con su sudor y sangre, y aún payasos anaranjados llegan a construir muros cuando las fronteras no existen. Somos libres como el viento, como pájaros peregrinos. Y tarde o temprano nos quitaremos las cadenas con nuestras caras alzadas al sol. A red bandana in a sea of green leaves, like a flag in the oppressive heat, that covers bronzed backs and foreheads dappled with drops of sweat. The sound of the trains on the tracks and farm workers who don't have a second to pause, to breathe, the yellow machinery still like waiting monsters. But this country will not eat without them, but it devours them alive anyway. And graveyards are full of the cadavers of those who cross the border, searching for their American dream. Instead, they were devoured by the pack of wolves that call themselves farmers, that call themselves politicians, police, honorable businessmen, wolves dressed in white with daggers for fingers and fangs that shred. When I see fields filled with my people in this golden state before a receding horizon, I think about how my Ressa dies, at times slowly, little by little, and other times in a torrent of bullets, beneath the sun, in the fields, in the desert, and how valleys run with their sweat and their blood, build their walls when borders do not exist. We are free like the wind, like migrating birds, and sooner or later, we will remove our chains with our faces raised towards the sun. So that's that one. And the next one is a tribute poem for my aunt, who passed away in 2017. Ayer te vi en las nubes, en el colibrí que se paró en una rosa frente de mí, en las golondrinas que emprendieron vuelo, en el arco iris resplandeciente que apareció en el horizonte. Te escuché en el susurro del viento que arrullaba las hojas del viejo árbol de higos que solías mirar por tu ventana, y en el cucurucú de una paloma. Te soñé diciéndome que me amabas, que sigues conmigo, y que me visitas y me abrazas con el aroma del perfume de pitaque que tanto te gustaba, que aún me tomas de la mano y me dices, gato, vente a comer, que aún te llevaba a la costa de la carretera 1 a ver cómo las olas del mar llegaban a la orilla y a mirar aquellas flores moraditas que adornaban los campos. Aún te busco en el bosque, dentro de las sombras de los árboles, y en el amanecer, trato de escuchar tu risa, aquella risa que me cubría como un manto de estrellas y constelaciones, en las plantas que usabas para hacer remedios. No sé si sabías lo poderosa que eras. En otros tiempos te hubieran llamado bruja. Mi mamá te llamaba Petra, Petra Culebra, con cariño, claro, cariño en nuestro linaje de curanderas, parteras. Fuiste la mejor doctora de la familia, quizás aún mejor que mi abuela, no tan solo del cuerpo, pero del alma. Le tengo celos a Dios, que te guarda con mis abuelos en el cielo. Me hubiera gustado tenerte a mi lado toda mi vida. Siempre pensaron que eras mi mamá, con esos chinos castaños que te adornaban la cara, los ojos tapatíos y andar jacaroso. A veces se me olvida que has muerto. Jamás pensamos que no regresarías nunca. Odio los elevadores porque uno te causó la muerte. Pero cuando veo el rocío en las flores y me visitan los colibríes, pienso que Huitzilopochtli y la Virgen te dan permiso que me visites. I saw you in the clouds yesterday, in the hummingbird that perched on a rose, in the swallows that took flight, in the shimmering rainbow that appeared in the horizon. I heard you in the soft whispers of the wind that gently lulled the leaves of the old fig tree that you would gaze through your window, and in the cuckoo-cuckoo of a dove. I dreamed you telling me you loved me, that you are still with me, that you visit me, hug me, with the aroma of that pitaque perfume you liked so much, that you still take my hand saying, gato, come and eat, that I still take you to the coast off of Highway 1 to see how the ocean waves reach the shore, and to see those tiny purple flowers that adorn the countryside. I still search for you in the forest, in the shadows of trees, in the dawn. I try to hear your laugh that covered me like a warm cloak of stars and constellations, in the plants you use to make remedies. I don't know if you knew how powerful you were. In ancient times, they would have called you a witch. My mother called you Petra, Petra Culebra, with affection, of course, affection for a lineage of curanderas, midwives. You were the best doctor in our family, perhaps even better than our grandmother, not only of the body, but of the soul. I am jealous of God that keeps you with my grandparents in heaven. I would have liked to have you by my side my entire life. you were my mother, with those copper curls that framed and adorned your face, the Zapatillo eyes, Jalisco eyes, and your joyful stride. Sometimes I forget that you have died. We never thought you wouldn't return from that trip to Mexico. I hate elevators because one killed you. But when I see dew-covered roses and hummingbirds fly near me, I believe that the god Huitzilopochtli and the Virgin give you permission to visit me. And do we have time for one more or no?
Looking that way. I'm not here yet.
Okay. Let's do this. En defensa de nuestro coraje. En defensa de nuestro coraje, hay niños con ojos vacíos, enjaulados, sin el calor de un abrazo, sin cuidados médicos, muriendo, cubiertos de mugre, en pañales sucios. Los pediatras solo pueden ver sus cadáveres, niños maya que ni siquiera hablan español. En defensa de nuestro coraje, dos jóvenes enamorados, llenos de anhelo e ilusiones, murieron en un torrente de balas, cubriendo como manto a su hijo de meses. Y el monstruo anaranjado que causó la tragedia cargó a este niño con una sonrisa diabólica, sociópata. En defensa de nuestro coraje, días después del masacre en El Paso, la migra hizo la redada más grande en la historia de Estados Unidos, 600 y pico. Legales y ilegales fueron atrapados por la Gestapo. En defensa de nuestro coraje, hubo un grupo de protestantes y aliados judíos que fueron atropellados por una camioneta cargada de odio. Cuidado, la historia se repite, nos dicen. El holocausto latino es inminente. En defensa de nuestro coraje, hay madres que lloran ríos de lágrimas cuando les arrancan sus hijos de los brazos, que se quedan como la Virgen Dolorosa, como almas en pena, soñando pesadillas, viviendo pesadillas, un sufrimiento infernal. En defensa de nuestro coraje, ¿saben qué? No necesitamos defensa. In defense of our anger, there are children with vacant eyes, caged, without the warmth of an embrace, without medical care, dying, covered in grime, in dirty diapers. Pediatricians can only see their cadavers, Mayan children who can't even speak Spanish. In defense of our anger, two young lovers filled with hope and dreams died in a torrent of bullets, covering their baby with their bodies like a mantle, and the orange monster that caused the tragedy later carried the baby with a diabolical sociopathic smile. In defense of our anger, days after the massacre in El Paso, ICE conducted the largest raid in United States history. 600-plus legal and illegal residents were trapped by the Gestapo. In defense of our anger, there was a large group of Jewish protesters and allies who were run over by a truck carrying hatred. Be careful, they tell us. History repeats itself. The Latin American Holocaust is imminent. In defense of our anger, there are mothers that cry rivers of blood when they tear their children from their arms, and they remain like the Virgin Dolorosa, like souls in purgatory, dreaming nightmares, living nightmares, and infernal suffering. In defense of our anger, you know what? We don't need a defense. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to call it the second runner. The runner's coming in, and it'll just be you today. And we got stuff to do with Poet Runner. Trying to come out with a broadsheet probably in October. You got anything coming up out there?
Up here, no, not imminently. I will probably be going up to Seattle as soon as I can manage it for a reading up there. That's not solidified yet, but yeah. And then we also have the reading, right? On October 9th for the...
The Intelligent Beast, but there's also an Intelligent Beast reading on September 11th with Mindy Smith, and I forget who else, but that's coming up, and
mm-hmm.
I actually got to promote some products. I've been taking 6 a.m. run Bolt to get my energy for running every day. Also, I take Psychotic. It's instant insane labs pre-workout before I work out in the morning, and that's been helping and, you know, change. I've been taking a lot of gummies from what?
What a name for the product.
I like it. But,
yeah.
I also want to promote gummies by Coley because they've actually pretty good with absorption. I've been taking those. I've been taking the greens and apple cider vinegar and the sleepy time. Those actually help. Those are great products to use. I mean, and also, what else? I've been taking some omega fish oil stuff. Just to keep running
your joint.
And going. You know,
that's very,
But that's it for Poet Runner. Come by tomorrow, and tomorrow Richard will be back. I'll have an award, and we'll be talking to Phoebe McAdams, and once in a while, Alice will be back as our substitute co-host. Thank you for listening. This has been the Poet Runner podcast. Thank you.